welcome to another episode of the Recapables Killing Eve Edition. I am Allison Herman. I am here, as always, with Kate Hallowell.
Hello, hello.
And this is our audio recap of Season 2, Episode 2, Nice and Neat, a title that does not describe anything that has ever happened on this show.
And probably also will not describe this episode of our podcast.
That's fair. I didn't get the greatest amount of sleep last night, so I'm a little bit loopy, but we're going to soldier through this together.
We got it.
We have so much to process. So why don't we just start with our basic tweet-length review of this episode of Killing Eve. Kate, what is yours?
My tweet-length review is that somehow in an episode in which Villanelle is low-key dying of an infected stomach wound,
yikes,
it's shitty, mediocre men that are still the biggest threat.
Ain't that the truth?
Honestly.
Truly. Also, stabbing, still bad, still not good for you.
Still not great. Doesn't
please,
help.
Please avoid knives.
Right. Avoid
if at all
cost.
Possible. Just a PSA to everyone. And mine, on a similar note, is that grown men definitely should not have dolls in their houses. And, oh yeah, maybe assassins should be kind of discreet.
It's a good note. It's a good note for Villanelle.
I kind of forgot that that's like maybe an advantage if
right.
you're in the whole professional murder business.
Yeah, like just a thought. Maybe they shouldn't know that you killed someone.
Yeah.
Kill someone.
I would say my slightly longer than tweet length impressions of this episode were like last episode was just kind of getting us up to speed on where, you know, our major players, with the exception of one who mm-hmm. we will talk about soon, kind of stand. This was like introducing all the new characters and storylines that are going to kind of bulk up the season and widen the world of the show in really interesting ways. So we have a new segment to talk about this, which is just, we're just going to run through all these new characters who have started to populate both sides of the Eve-Villanelle split.
So we meet Eve's new team in this episode. She has a new team with MI6 that are investigating female assassins, the female assassin threat. They think it's Villanelle. We obviously soon find out that it's maybe expanded
yes.
beyond Villanelle.
R.I.P. Trafalgar Square,
yes.
rat holding a Coke can.
Gone but not forgotten.
Pour out a soda for you.
yeah, we have a new location, new team, with the exception of one person. Kenny is back. We're still with Kenny. We're going to talk about
God.
Him. Maybe more in a moment when we get to Eve Plaster's work-life balance. But first up, we have some new members. Jess is the first one, and she's very no-nonsense. We can kind of tell from her original introduction. Very dry sense of humor. And she's also pregnant.
Yeah, we don't learn a whole lot about her personality, and we also... First of all, I think we should just, like, cop to this. Neither of us even noticed that she was pregnant the first time we watched
nope.
this episode.
Absolutely not. I put in this note, I was like, is she pregnant? Like, she rubs her belly in one scene, and I was like, oh. And I had to, like, go back and rewatch parts of it.
She's wearing black, as we know, very slimming.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
also, it does occur to me that this is very in line with Killing Eve taking a lot of the female experience
100%.
For granted.
100%. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No one is ever like, oh, shit, you're pregnant.
Exactly.
It's not, like, I think the obvious comparison would be someone like, weirdly, I feel like pregnant detectives are like kind of a trend. Like,
yeah.
Carrie Mulligan,
definitely.
In Collateral, a
uh-huh.
favorite Ringer show.
Yes.
Very heavily pregnant the whole time.
Yes.
And then on the current season of the OA, there's
Ooh.
Also a pregnant detective who like goes into labor while investigating the case. But this is just, you know, a lady who is good at her job and
yeah, just happens to be pregnant. Yeah, I agree. If it were any other show, I would be worried for her because she's pregnant. Just because, you know, gross men shows like to kill off pregnant women. It's just like part of the whole trend of like violence
yeah.
against women. I feel a little better that it's Killing Eve. I'm not immediately like worried for her life.
Truly, no one is safe on the show
Very
and has
true.
Plot armor except for Eve and Villanelle.
Especially coworkers. A lot of coworkers getting murdered out
yes,
here.
the specter of the possibility of being murdered is in fact raised in this episode. But
yes.
in addition to Jess, we also meet Hugo,
Ugh.
Who, because we are not British, I feel like we don't fully grasp like the ramifications of the British class system and
yes.
his place within it. But it turns out, I think we've all had a shitty, privileged, wealthy coworker who...
Yeah, who loves to
like
talk
that.
Over you. He's just, you know, exactly. He's like mansplaining in human form.
Right now, we have no idea how long she's been operating or who she works for. We're working on the assumption that this is a woman, late to middle age, looks like an immigrant worker, so, you know, she's not white.
What makes you think that?
The fact that you just interrupted me mid-sentence makes me think that.
So obviously, like, he's just the privileged white male in the office who
Yeah,
just
I just realized he kind of reminds me of Topher on 30 Rock. It's like,
he does. Yeah,
he's just, you know, I went to college near Boston, in this case, literally Cambridge.
Yeah, he, you know, he corrects Jess, but he's an Oxford man. All
oh,
that,
true. I'm so. Just, I'm on Jess's wavelength, so I'm yes. still negging him from
for
afar.
Sure. For sure. Another new character is, as just mentioned, the mystery second assassin.
Yes. So we should talk about, we learned last week that Alistair Peel, the name that Nadia wrote on the slip of paper, mm-hmm. is this tech tycoon who died under seemingly like totally natural, unsuspicious circumstances 2 months ago, but it was actually an air bubble injected into his stream. And they figure out this time, because Eve is perhaps a little too good at her job.
Uh-huh. She does realizing well, too well.
She's like, oh, there's no way that this incredibly flamboyant, showy, psychopathic person would want to do anything as discreet as just posing as a pedicurist, which means that there's another killer on the loose.
Yes, and she goes to the kids of Alistair Peel, checks, they're like, shows them, you know, Villanelle's pictures, like, do you recognize this person? Basically confirms that it wasn't her, that there's a second female assassin that we now need to contend with.
Who they call the Ghost. Which is almost as badass a name as Villanelle.
Extremely badass. And we also, there's a moment that we're going to talk about later where Villanelle says, I don't like ghosts. And part of me is wondering
good
if
catch.
That's a little bit of foreshadowing as to their dynamic.
Well, yeah, but that's also Eve's immediate reaction is not like, oh, maybe we should catch this person.
Right.
It's Villanelle is going to be so pissed.
So pissed. I honestly can't wait. They seem like total opposites professionally, and I can't wait to see them interact face to face. We know basically nothing about this other woman other than this, we'll talk about it later, this great scene that we get of
yeah, we
her.
Get a profile of her likely attributes,
right.
But we don't even, we get to see her work, but we don't get to see her at all.
Right. So we know basically nothing about her except that she's very discreet and very different from Villanelle.
Yes.
And the final new character is Raymond, who is Villanelle's new handler. She's already been through a couple handlers. She has had no problem with any of them so far. First, there was Constantine, who she obviously...
I think she's had a little bit of a problem with the guy that she shot in the face.
Listen, she handled him very well. He was super annoying. He was her follow-up to Constantine, who obviously she has an ongoing dynamic with. Yeah, she shot him in the face immediately. But she really has never been sort of at the mercy of her handler before that we've seen.
Yeah, like Constantine, we know, has this very paternal, very indulgent. He said that he's kind of advocated on her behalf. Mm-hmm. And it does not seem like Raymond is similarly motivated.
No. So she gets into his car at the end of the episode. Obviously, she's very injured. She's in really bad shape. She probably has like a fever, an infection, whatever. And she kind of expects a different dynamic with him than she gets. And she says, I thought I'd been fired. And he says, circumstances have changed.
We've heard that before.
The exact interaction that Eve and Carolyn had in the last episode.
Yes. A famous line from season one is Villanelle telling Eve, I think if you go up high enough, you'll find we work for the same people. And it seems increasingly likely that was very literal.
Yes. So she meets Raymond. He basically like is just playing with her. He's like, okay, get out of the car. Like if you don't want to work with me, obviously they don't hit it off. And then he basically locks her in the car, puts her in a stranglehold, presses her against the window, and like,
I mean, we both know that Villanelle is like not really a fan of anything that is like boring or dreary or again like any kind of discreet. So I think it helped when she had this like very sexy, warm, older, paternal Russian handler who like understands her sense of romance. But she kind of tells off Raymond, and we have this clip that really like expresses her feelings towards her new situation.
Yes.
You know what? I've had a really shitty couple of days. And I really, really need to go to a doctor. What I don't need is a boring stranger in a Volvo giving me a lesson on how to use the phone!
All right.
Boring and Volvo are like the two worst words in the English language if you are Villanelle.
Devastating. And yeah, he doesn't respond well to that. And she doesn't respond well to him not responding well to that. And it's going to be bad going forward.
It's going to be bad. She's going to be asked to murder more people, possibly people we actually like and care about.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I'm both very curious and a little afraid.
Yeah, I look forward to her eventually murdering him in some sort of colorful way. I feel like that's definitely coming and I'm excited for
it. Or Eve murdering him in some colorful way.
As long as we lose Raymond as soon as possible, I'm down.
Agreed. But there are our people we would like to keep around as long as possible.
Great segue.
Which brings us to Eve Pilastri's work-life balance. Spoiler, she doesn't have one.
She never does.
you know, we here at this podcast care very deeply about the well-being of Eve's husband, Nico.
And we found that this is maybe an island that we're on by ourselves.
Yeah, I'm proud to be on this island, personally.
So am I. I care a lot about Nico. I really want him protected and happy. And first of all, the internet, basically the first couple episodes that we did, the season one recap and the first one, responded with some confusion as to why we like Nico so much.
Yes, words like boring and, yeah, and drip were tossed
and
around.
And he gets in the way of Villanelle and Eve, which he does, but like, is that really
his fault?
His fault. And then my mom texted me this weekend after her season one rewatch and was like, ugh, Nico's the worst. I was like,
Kate's mom!
You're supposed to be on my team.
Yes,
and she is not.
We are firmly team Nico.
Firmly.
He's very understanding, considering everything his wife has put him through.
We stand by him, including in this episode when, you know, he's trying to understand. They're talking about things. She tells him about Alistair Peel. She's, like, lying to him about other weird things.
Yeah,
still.
So she's disclosing certain parts of her job that she maybe wouldn't have before. She
right.
was like, here's this dude who's been murdered, and we're trying to figure out who murdered him. Like, okay, good, we're making progress.
Uh-huh.
But then we also see that she's Googling, like, Paris woman murdered stab in bed next to him. And then he's like, what are you doing?
Shopping.
For a dress that looks suspiciously like the one Villanelle bought for
it
her.
It sure does.
Last season.
It sure does.
So there's only a certain level of disclosure that she is
right.
willing to do. But there is one person that she's apparently able to be honest with about her experience in Paris.
Oh, Kenny's back.
Kenny.
We missed him so much.
What a sweet boy.
What a sweet boy who does not deserve any of this. So she reunites with Kenny when she meets her new office mates. Truly so thrilled to see him there. She's thrilled to see him there because she has a level of understanding with him that she doesn't have even with Carolyn. She, you know, they bonded in Moscow over seeing Carolyn walk into the prison and talk to Villanelle and not trusting her, even though she's his mother. And so she immediately tells him that she saw Villanelle in Paris, that she stabbed Villanelle in Paris, that she may have killed Villanelle in Paris. And poor dear sweet Kenny just cannot process this information.
Oh, this is really bad.
Oh, no.
Does Mom know?
Do you think I should tell her?
No, no. You're withholding information on an investigation that you're working on.
Well, on the bright side, now you are too.
Oh, listen.
Poor Kenny.
Eve, you can fuck up your own work-life balance, but if you mess up Kenny's, I swear to God.
We will come for you. Don't fuck with Kenny.
Protect
Kenny.
And
she already has.
Protect Nico.
Right. And what we hear in the end of that clip is Hugo coming in and like interrupting them, and he leaves and is like, are you two having an affair? Because they're just awkwardly standing there waiting for him to leave, and Eve says, yes, I don't want that for Kenny. Just put him in such an awkward position.
I mean, Kenny's already in a pretty awkward position. He's working for his mom.
His mom's like not trustworthy. It's a whole poor Kenny. We need to be concerned about Kenny's work-life balance.
We really need to be concerned about everyone.
We do.
But Eve continues to be very good at her job for the same reasons that she is maybe also bad at her job.
Right, yeah.
Which is that she is obsessed with a serial murderer and maybe, like, is a little too capiche with her.
In tune, yeah. Their minds are a little too close. So she does another, sort of a callback to season one when she's talking to the sketch artist. She's telling the team about Villanelle and kind of just starts mooning over her again.
She's sloppy. No, not usually. She's flamboyant and attention-seeking and instinctive, spoilt, easily bored. But no, she's not sloppy.
Not wrong. Should maybe modulate her tone of voice a little.
Like, please stop mooning over Villanelle while you're like trying to inform people about
her
whereabouts.
Please repress your crush. We have all had an office crush in our lives, and we have learned to be subtle about it.
She's just staring into the middle distance, like her eyes go out of focus, and she's just like talking about her face. It's like, stop doing that.
Yeah, I will also add one of the more relatable moments in the history of this show is that Eve is doing all this while giving a PowerPoint presentation because she's now considered an expert on female assassins,
uh-huh.
and she just cannot figure out how to work the remote, but is also like furious when her mansplaining coworker tries to help her work the remote.
Extremely relatable.
Yeah, we have all been there, Eve. We feel you.
We really have.
Your all-consuming obsession with someone who kind of wants to murder you.
And finally, in Eve Pilastri's work-life balance, at the end of the episode, they walk out of the murder scene, after which, realizing that Villanelle was there and has escaped and the body's warm, so she's close, and Carolyn says, I think we're going to need to get you some protection. And Eve replies, yeah, you think? Yeah,
to which Eve? We were like, double you think?
Honestly,
oh my God.
Finally, you've needed protection for at least the last five episodes of your
it's
show.
It's almost like a serial killer showed up in your house in episode five and you didn't respond to that in any way, shape, or form and instead went to Russia and then Paris.
Like, I don't understand why this is the final point where she's like, yeah, I need protection. Is it just that she's back in England? I guess so.
But, yeah, I guess. It's now that they have definitive proof that she did not actually murder Villanelle. And maybe she's like, right. Oh, well, now that I've stabbed this person, maybe she also wants to stab me.
Sure.
Instead of eating microwave shepherd's pie at my kitchen table.
It feels like those were already kind of to that point. But, you know, we'll take it. As long as she gets protection and Nico gets protection.
Yeah, that's really what we care about.
That's our main priority.
As we know, Eve is Villanelle's, like, fake girlfriend.
Right. Yeah, I'm really not concerned about Eve. We need to protect Nico. That's my main concern.
But so that brings us up to speed with the Eve half of this episode. And in our scene of the week, I think we can touch a little bit on what happens with Villanelle this week, which I think is once again, like last week, like a very big break from how we usually see her.
Yes, for sure.
My pick for scene of the week is after Villanelle has hitchhiked in the trunk of this poor family's car. They have somehow managed to not discover that all of their luggage is missing yet. She tries to do her laundry, gets her antibiotics stolen, gets saddled with some extremely ugly and unfortunate Basildon, England laundromat clothes.
Oh, they're so bad.
It's the it's like maybe the toughest fit in the
it
history
is. We're
of
gonna
this
get
show.
The fit of the week later yeah. and expand on that. But
I'm
yeah.
getting ahead of myself. But extremely she shows tough. Up like clad in this very inadequate fit in a supermarket, and she tries to kind of work her Villanelle magic on various strangers and see like what she can get other people to give to her. And they don't belabor it too much, which is always something I really appreciate about Killing Eve. But we've already talked about how Villanelle is now operating without, like, the literal protection of, like, a very armed, very scary criminal organization overseeing her every move. But now you kind of see that another thing that's always protected her is that she's this young, beautiful woman. And when people see young, beautiful women, they kind of want to help them out and they're not suspicious of them. And Villanelle is like a very objective evaluator of her own appearance. Like there's a famous scene from season one where she just looks in the mirror and is like, wow, I'm so beautiful. So normally she's able to appreciate how her appearance helps her in the world. And this time she looks in a mirror and you see her kind of like recoil and like try to do a little makeup that like really is not doing a lot for the open gashes on her face.
Yeah, not great.
And she walks up to a few people in the supermarket until she finds this guy, Julian, who, like, not the best bet on her part. But she walks up to a few people who are, like, who kind of, like, wrinkle their nose and are like, I don't want to help you, and clearly think that she's a homeless person.
Uh-huh.
And it's really interesting to watch her operate without the kind of shield that being a young, affluent, gorgeous person affords her.
Right, and it's such a surprise to her, too. Like, she clearly isn't how she sees herself inside still, even knowing what she's been through. And she like, again, like looks in that mirror and is like, oh, like I didn't realize that this was what I was working with. Like, apparently we're going to make this work.
Yeah. It's also this like weird part of her being a psychopath is that she's totally detached from like not only human emotions, but also her own appearance. Like it's almost like her face is just a mask that she manipulates however she wants.
Right. Yeah. She puts on the blush in the mirror and like very, very like on purpose, like, raises her cheeks into this, like, weird, awkward smile where you can be, like, you just see her, like, putting on the mask and being, like, all right, here we go. It's very weird to see her come to terms with that. My scene of the week was, I mean, there's so much that happens in the house that neither of us chose as the scene of the week. She follows Julian home to his house. She meets his mother in a, you know, we're going to talk about that later, too, and Jodie Comer can, but in a, you know, very tense scene, bonds with his mother in a very creepy scene where she tells her to be wary of Julian, which is always a good sign.
Yeah, his mother who suffers from dementia and is completely out of it and then suddenly comes into focus and is like, be careful around my creepy adult son who has a house full of dolls and locks me in my room at night.
He's a nice boy. I was like, oh, Lord. Yeah, not great. I mean, I guess suppose we didn't pick those scenes because it's not the strongest, I guess, storyline from Villanelle in this episode.
Yeah, I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. This is definitely like not her average setting. And I think that definitely affects how we see it.
Right. But one final fun scene of the episode is the cleaning lady murder scene from The Ghost.
Yeah. So Villanelle is currently sidelined and is not able to be a badass assassin who takes out all her targets. And so while we don't see The Ghost, we do get to see her in action in this very fun, I guess she like poisons someone's coffee in an office.
Right.
But one of the things that I love about the show, that we both love about this show, is that it really toys a lot with the idea of, like, who is visible and who is not.
Right.
Villanelle is very visible in some ways and not in others. Eve is kind of invisible at her job, and Villanelle sees her, and that's a huge part of their attraction.
Right.
And now The Ghost, we learn, is almost certainly an older, not white woman who is exactly the kind of person who's just totally ignored, even though she's in a room alone with a billionaire once a week.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, they get to this in various ways. You know, the Alistair Peel's children don't remember what she looks like, which Eve is like, so clearly she's a racial minority woman who maybe is like a cleaning lady. And then as Eve's explaining this, we get this sort of, I mean, we can't really tell if it actually happened this way or if we're just kind of seeing the potential for what this person could do. I think it's implied that this did actually happen, but, you know, this cleaning lady walks into this office, replaces.
I would not be surprised if Eve and Carolyn shared a hamburger over this man's corpse in the next episode.
Exactly. So, you know, the cleaning woman walks into this office, replaces this man's coffee cup very discreetly, so discreetly that it's almost hard to see in the scene until you see that she's also carrying a coffee cup. And then he basically, like, chokes in this very dramatic way, and she just, like,
and she just continues about her business
wheels
and just walks
her card
out.
Away, which is so different from, like, just the scenes in season one of Villanelle, like, toying with that guy in the office, like, with her gun, and he's running around and smearing blood everywhere, and she's
playing hide-and-seek in an Italian mansion.
Exactly. She's rolling around in the rolly chair in the office, and she's just, like, so bored, and he's like, I know I have children, and she's like, what would I do with your children? And there's, like, a whole, like, it's just that versus this office setting is so different.
But it's also, like, a very disturbing kind of competence porn.
Sure, yeah,
like,
yeah,
I feel
yeah.
like a really fun part of the early episodes of Killing Eve is just watching Villanelle, like, run around unrestricted and just be extremely
Absolutely.
Effective.
Yeah.
And this is a similar, like, oh, cool. So, like, Villanelle can't really do this right now, but we get to watch someone else just, like, take out some dude who, like, doesn't pay attention to her.
Right,
doesn't
exactly.
take her seriously.
Very satisfying.
But speaking of Villanelle, this may not have been the best week for her character, but our favorite segment of this and every week is Jodie Comer Can, in which we itemize the things Jodie Comer can do to us based on the things that her character does. So, without further ado, Jodie Comer can strategically position an apple as a secret message to me at the scene of a child murder that she also committed.
I would allow that. Jodie Comer can break into my room in the middle of the night brandishing a ceramic cat figurine and screaming at the top of her lungs.
I would let her. Jodie Comer can openly threaten to stab me with my own kitchen utensil while I laugh nervously and try to figure out if she's joking. She is not joking.
She's not joking, but I'd be okay with it. Jodie Comer can stay at my house rent-free for days on end and then ultimately slit my throat as thanks for my flawless and completely innocent hospitality.
And stick a toilet brush in my mouth and let my dementia-ridden mother wander out into the streets of
English. You know, I would allow it. I would.
It's really tough. So this transitions us to Fit of the Week,
yeah.
which tragically, as we mentioned,
it's a tough week for Fit of the Week. It's going to get better later in the season.
Yes. But Villanelle has once again reconnected with her bosses
and her allowance.
Maybe
basically.
She has a per diem that she can make use of in a fancy department store. Maybe there's a Harrods trip next week. Who knows? But yeah, the grocery store outfit was like very deliberately not Villanelle at her best.
Absolutely not. Also, she stepped out of at the very beginning of the episode, she steps out of the car still in those Crocs. And I like just physically cringed like, oh, she still has them on her feet. And then, yeah, she goes from that to this like lumpy cardigan and like ill-fitting shirt and jean skirt.
Oh, and don't forget the weird nightgown that he puts her in as kind of her, like, sick patient gear.
So unfortunate.
So gross.
It's
but yeah,
really gross.
It's really tough to watch Villanelle be in this helpless position. And it also felt like this was kind of the episode where by the end, she's essentially in the same place that Eve was last episode, where right. she has reconnected with the employer that she thought had fired her.
Exactly.
And they're both kind of, like, reset to neutral.
Yes.
But it's like they kind of took an extra episode and, like, trapped her in a creepy man's house.
Yeah, just to get her there, finally. But luckily, we did have Carolyn to get us through this episode. She had a variety of great
God
coats.
Bless.
Bless Carolyn's outerwear. Honestly, I don't know if we would have survived without it. But she's got, like, a blue coat at the beginning. She's got a gray coat on later.
There's like, it's like some kind of cashmere, maybe marine. It's like a very fine yeah. knitwear.
Also, she like tends to pop the collar of all her coats, which I just really appreciate. It's just one more little thing there. I'm like, oh,
it's like Eileen Fisher on steroids. Ugh. Just like tasteful neutrals for days.
She's so great. And this is a great segue to our next segment, the Quote of the Week Award.
I mean, I think it's probably consistently going to go to Carolyn, but this week in particular, there was no context.
Absolutely
or no contest, and we do have a clip.
How do you always look so good? I mean, do you even sleep?
It's my moisturizer. It's made of pig's placenta. Costs a fortune, smells like ass, but it is exceedingly effective.
I don't mind smelling like ass.
I'll send you the link.
Killing Eve's Guide to Skincare.
Carolyn, send me the link.
Leak the routine.
Please. Honestly, Jodie Comer also has incredible skin, just for the record. And we're going to talk about her press tour in a minute, but like a lot of her articles have been about her skincare routine, and I don't even care. I need to know more.
I mean, I'm sure I cannot afford it, but
oh, definitely
it's
not.
Definitely worth knowing about. I also, yes. Another thing I love about this exchange is that Eve has an American accent. It's established that she grew up in Connecticut, but the writers just consistently like let her like slip into Britishisms from time to time.
It's
like
great.
Last week she mentioned she needed to go to the loo. This week she talks about arse instead of ass. And it's just, you know, it's funny because like they clearly know who they're writing for, and
exactly.
they know this person does not have a British accent, but they make sure that we know that she is fully acclimated to her current home.
Also, I just love that they know that we're obsessed with Carolyn and she always does look amazing. And like, I too want to know how she looks amazing all the time.
I know. Just because she's an older, hyper competent woman doesn't mean she hasn't mastered her beauty
routine.
She
looks fabulous. Another great quote this week. So we get into the new office, and very obviously absent is Elena, Kirby Howell-Baptiste from last season.
Now that Villanelle is part of the Peel investigation, I thought it might be useful to keep some of the Trafalgar team intact.
Oh, so will Elena be?
Elena felt the job was no longer for her.
She's worried about getting murdered.
Okay, great. Like, you should be.
Very smart life decision on Elena, the character's part, but also this is code for Kirby Howell-Baptiste is now a series regular on not one, but two shows that film in America, which makes it very tough to play a supporting role on an ensemble show shot in the UK.
Yes,
so
she's on The Good Place and on Barry.
Highly recommend both those shows.
She's
highly
great.
Recommend her work on both those shows. She will obviously be missed.
Hopefully she won't get murdered on either of those shows. She could have gotten murdered on this one.
Extremely high possibility of that on definitely Barry, and she's
you're
already
right.
technically dead
oh,
on The
you're
Good
right.
Place.
You're
apologies
right. Good Place
for spoilers.
yeah, you're totally right. So actually, she maybe would have had a longer lifespan on Killing Eve. Very tough for Kirby Howell-Baptiste. Get her a role where she can like stay alive for a while.
Yeah. Also in the rapid fire stuff that we don't have clips of, I did love that when Villanelle stumbles on this mother in the middle of the night and almost bashes her head in with a ceramic cat figurine, her explanation for why she freaked out so much is, I thought she was a ghost. I hate ghosts. Which
I can't argue with that.
Who doesn't?
Honestly.
Truly. And then later, when Eve is sort of confabbing with Hugo, or just kind of like getting his second opinion on her brainstorming, she asked him, what do you know about psychopaths? His response is, I went to boarding school, which
no argument here. It sounds about right.
Never has a brag been so damning or so true.
And also one more scene from this episode that was great, and one more line. Villanelle's in Julian's house. She's trying to get out. She's trying to make contact with anyone. And she calls first the 12, and then she calls MI6 to try to get in contact with Eve.
Hello?
Hello. Please clearly state the name of the person you wish to be connected to after the tone.
Eve Pollastri.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Eve Pollastri.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Eve Pollastri, you piece of shit!
I just love the way she says Pilastri with the rolled R.
Oh, and she's so mad and she's like smiling, but like going a little bit crazy. Oh, I'd love that. And I also, right before this line, she tries to call her former organization, whether it's the 12 or whatever it is. And it's kind of subtle, but her like sign code to like say who she is, this is Cher Horowitz. I failed my driving test.
Honestly, she does look a lot like Alicia Silverstone.
She does. I can see it. And obviously that doesn't get through it does eventually because Raymond shows up. But at the time, she thinks it doesn't work, which is why she then tries MI6. But she's just so desperate and yelling these like ridiculous things. And Eve Pilastri, you piece of shit, is just an iconic line. Also later, when Carolyn plays the phone message for Eve, she doesn't even say anything. Eve says, "How did you know it was her?" And Carolyn just like hits the button on her phone and just plays, "Eve Pilastri, you piece of shit." And then neither of them says anything and they just walk away.
Who else could it be?
Honestly.
So lots of quotables this week, which brings us to the end of the stuff that actually happens within this episode. But lots of goings on in this sort of extended Killing Eve universe this week.
Yes, for sure.
So for our syllabus, first, Jodie Comer, really out there.
She has been everywhere. And I know because every time there's a picture taken of Jodie Comer in this world, like my spidey senses tingle and I have to go interact with it online.
And by your spidey sense, you mean Sean Yu.
I do mean that. He sends it to me or I send it to him. But yeah, I know because literally I was like, there are too many Jodie Comer photo shoots for me to be sharing as like a responsible person on Twitter.com. Like it's too much and I need to pick
it's and also
choose.
Just too much for any person to keep up with. But I think it's very interesting just in terms of how they have chosen to promote the season. Last season, I think understandably, the narrative was very much Sandra Oh is back on TV and she really like took her time with all her Grey's Anatomy money to like wait for a role that really deserved her. And it was this beautiful narrative and she became the first Asian American actress to be nominated for a lead actress Emmy in the dramatic category. And like, it was just a lot of goodwill around Sandra Oh, which was 100% deserved.
Yes, for sure.
But it appears that the spin this season is, to paraphrase our colleague Chris Ryan, what about Comer, though?
And I'm totally with that. I love it. And yeah, they're definitely sort of just pushing her out onto every magazine and every talk show as like, this is an incredibly talented young actress who like should be everywhere and is going to be everywhere. And like, look at her amazing face. And I'm extremely here
like,
for it.
Town and Country, the New York Times.
Oh my God, she's everywhere. She's on Elle. She's on Seth Meyers, Ellen. She's got write-ups in like the New York Times, LA Times. Magazine covers everywhere.
Also, a great piece on Slate, which we will link to in the show notes, by Inku Kang, which is just like, we should be paying attention to Jodie Comer's performance and how amazing it is.
Yes.
And just like the way awards work, people know who Sandra Oh is, so she was the one who was nominated.
Right.
But they really are like equally virtuosic
sure.
showcases.
Yes. And I just love it. I feel like the Emmys campaign for her has already started for this season, and I'm fully behind it.
Same. It's FYC season. The billboards are up
it
all
is.
Over Los
it
Angeles.
Is. We're already there. It's never not FYC season.
This is fair. So, in other extremely relevant Killing Eve news, we're going to get a season 3.
It was just renewed for season 3 with a new showrunner, Suzanne Heathcote from Fear the Walking Dead. What do we think? What are our thoughts?
I think it's really interesting that they're kind of preempting the turnover narrative mm-hmm. by just being like, yeah, we're just going to have a different showrunner every season.
Right. That really surprised me. Maybe I just don't know as much about it as like the general TV critic.
No, it's very
does.
Rare. And I sort of wrote about this in my review that TV basically like this entire century has been discussed in such like a tourist terms mm-hmm. like Matthew Weiner is just kind of considered the final right. word on Mad Men, etc. And even like the first season of this show was so associated with Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Absolutely, yeah.
And now they seem to be very focused on kind of widening the credit for who runs the show and turning it into this showcase for lots of different showrunners, which is very unusual and it will be interesting to see how that pans out. Also in Phoebe Waller-Bridge news, the trailer for Fleabag Season 2,
Ooh.
The Second Coming, came out today.
Incredible.
I'm so excited. Just, I have no more thoughts. I'm just so excited to have Phoebe Waller-Bridge back
we have,
on my TV
we
screen.
We have faith in Killing Eve. We have faith in Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and that's our creed going forward.
So, spinning forward, speaking
yes.
forward, let's get into predictions for next episode, starting with Constantine back.
Oh my gosh, so exciting. Honestly, I was surprised at how excited I was to see him. I was, for whatever reason, like, he peeked around the corner and we had just had that scene with Raymond and I was like, thank God. Like, I just missed his fuzzy face.
Look, we knew it was coming. Kim Bodnia was
oh,
not
yeah.
subtle about
absolutely not.
Sharing photos from the set.
No. But yeah, he just sort of peeks around the corner and says, "Hello, Eve." Hello. Is that a good impression? Hello, Eve. In like the last few seconds of this episode, and Carolyn obviously has been hiding him, and Kenny has some feelings about that, and it's going to be some drama.
I feel like this is maybe a good moment for Eve to come clean about the stabbing, to just be like, okay, well, you have been like secreting an international fugitive in your home. Also, BT Dubs, I almost maybe kind of murdered our target.
Right. And now she knows she's alive. So now she can just be like, I stabbed her and she got away. And it's like a give and take. You're right. It's like a give and take of like really bad secrets. And then they're like on the same page going forward.
Yes. But Constantine like has a lot of information that both Eve does not have and the audience does not have.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see, like, maybe it will be an info dump. Maybe it will be yet more tense repartee where he's like, if I told you, I would have to kill you.
Right. And we still don't, I mean, we still haven't gotten any information from Carolyn either about really where her allegiances lie. Obviously, we know they lie with Constantine because she's been hiding his, you know, survival. But, you know, it seems like the next episode will give us more information about the 12, more information about Carolyn and Constantine's dynamic and whether we can trust Carolyn.
Yeah, because this episode gives us more information about the 12 in kind of a ground level way, which I think is actually like a really good direction to go, where it's like instead of learning more about the bosses, we just see more foot soldiers who are incredibly compelling and entertaining female assassins.
Right.
So what's not to love?
Yeah, we just sort of expanded the lens. So now we kind of just need to, from Constantine's specific perspective and like how it relates to Villanelle, just kind of learn more on that standpoint. Also, in the next episode, we're just going to need to see how Villanelle handles this "quote unquote" tighter leash that has.
Yeah,
been
what's
put
the
on
status
her?
Quo? Eve just gets upgraded to like. I also think we should comment. Her new office just has so much natural light.
It's really nice. Very
clearly
open
an
floor
upgrade.
Plan.
I don't think Villanelle is going to get a similar like leveling up in terms of the resources that she is afforded.
That feels about right. And yeah, so it's, you know, she doesn't do great with certain authority figures. And yeah, I think seeing how this will chafe at her will be interesting going forward.
So that brings us to the end of this episode. We will be back next week and every week for the remainder of this season. We are so excited to keep breaking down the show with you guys. Thank you for listening.